came home, there was a man in my house. He had an artificial arm.
Are you saying that I killed my wife?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen up. We have a fugitive that's been on the run for 90 minutes. Average foot speed over uneven ground, barring injury, is 4 miles an hour. That will give you a radius of 6 miles. What I want out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, and doghouse in this area. Your fugitive's name is Dr. Richard Kimball. Go get him.
Boy, that would make Barry Morse turn over in his grave, wouldn't it, to hear that Gerard out there talking like that. Hi, everybody. We're going to be talking about that. Talking Fugitive here on Sherevision Radio. Tonight is going to be part two of what turned out to be a rather spirited discussion among the moderators during part one of the movie The Fugitive. Moderators are the moderators of the Yahoo discussion group, The Fugitive Views and Reviews. So let's turn it over to them for part two, and we'll start off with Bobby Neer.
Tonight's program is a continuation of a discussion we began 2 weeks ago on the Fugitive movie from 1993. After that program ended, I went to our group, The Fugitive Views and Reviews, and posted a new poll asking group members to vote on various aspects of the film version. One of those aspects was a straight up front question. Do you like or dislike the movie, or are you in the middle on this? You like some parts, you dislike others. I was not at all surprised to see that everyone picked the middle except me. So as of tonight, I'm the only person standing alone claiming that he does not like it. In the intervening 2 weeks, I wondered if it was possible that so many people could be wrong and one man be right. And after much soul-searching, have come to this conclusion, yes, it is possible, I'm right and everyone else is wrong. The movie sucks and I will never like it. I just wanted to make that clear. 2 weeks ago, we had a lively debate on whether the film version compares favorably to the original series in its portrayal of the main characters. This evening, I thought we would start off by comparing individual classic scenes and the attempt to recreate them. The most obvious one is where Kimball and Gerard confront each other at the criminal lockup where Richard has gone to check on a one-armed man. It's well done. It's exciting. Gerard takes several shots at Kimball in a blatant attempt not to capture him, but to kill him. Taken by itself, it's not bad. But in episode number 4 of the original series, Never Wave Goodbye Part 1, what I believe is the very best chase scene of them all occurs when the two antagonists do the same thing at the same place for the same reason, only there are several things missing now. Like an elevator instead of a stairway. Two unforgettable looks when Gerard and Kimball see each other just feet apart. A brilliantly filmed on-location outdoor chase scene involving a city bus, a patrol car, and Gerard jumping out of it to capture Kimball, who he believes is still on the bus, to say nothing of a memorable and unusual scene with Richard watching all of that play out in front of him below while he stands at the top of a hill with the beautiful Karen on his arm. For me, this is the best scene in the series, and if I could go back and watch only one, this would be it. Even after 45 years, viewing it now still leaves me breathless. The attempt to recreate it in the film version, although a noble one, just doesn't even come close. Ken, what say you about this?
I'm glad you mentioned Never Wave Goodbye. Anytime you mention that episode, which is my all-time favorite, it reminds me of Susan Oliver. And yes, you know, Kimball goes into the downtown headquarters police station to get a lead on the one-armed man. And this is episode 4, so actually we have not seen yet Gerard and Kimball face-to-face, right?
I believe that's true.
Yeah, in episode one, Gerard was there, but no meeting. And then episode three, you had Gerard, but no actual meeting. So when the first time you see it, it's Kimball finds out that the guy he's looking up is not the real guy. And then there's some bars separating the elevator and where Kimball is. And the first time you see it, I mean, it just highlights the entire series. It really does, because now we know what the whole series is about. Gerard is after Kimball. Kimball's a fugitive. He's got to be on the run. And yes, I love that location scene, or filming. You know, it's all outside. You have the running up and down the stairs. You got Karen following. And then Kimball gets on the bus, gets off the bus, runs up some more stairs. And that was very exciting. But in the movie version, the first time I saw it, it was some action, you know, going, and I kind of liked it. And then I'm looking at the screen captures right now. You've got Harrison Ford with his foot stuck in the elevator, and then you have Gerard shooting. Why is he shooting? You know, I thought he had to capture the guy.
Well, it's actually not an elevator. It's stuck in. These are like glass doors.
Yeah, he's in the doorway with bulletproof glass.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. You're right. But it was kind of a fun scene to watch. You know, you're going up and down, and then, you know, Kimball's running. Gerard's frantic, sees him, actually calls out his name on the stairs, and they have that look. I think they borrowed that from the original series, right? Just that look.
Yeah, but do you see what's missing here in the Never Wave Goodbye scene? First of all, before anything happens, remember, we see the floor numbers by the elevators. The camera pans in on the numbers on the wall.
Yeah.
So right away, you know that Kimball's on one floor and Gerard is on another. And the question is, are they going to get together? And then you have the elevator door opens. And David Janssen gives the look of a lifetime. I mean, I don't know of anything he was ever in after that, in which he gave a more startled look. What the director had to do or how many times they had to do that to get it right, I don't know. But it's quite incredible, and it's simply not created in the movie with them on a stairway. It's not quite the same. The suspense is missing. And there is no real outdoor scene. I mean, that is most unusual, that scene done outdoors. They managed to find some place wherever they were filming where there was these stairs that led up to the top of a hill, and look down on what was going on when Gerard was chasing him in a patrol car after the bus. I mean, there's nothing in that movie scene that comes even close to that. Sure, taken by itself, it's a pretty good scene. I mean, I'll grant you that. But what's really missing is the suspense and the real lead-up to it. And that's just another one of those. I mean, you know, I'll give them credit for this. If you were going to recreate a scene, I wouldn't have picked anything but that. That was the best one to pick. But it doesn't really cut it. It's not quite the same. What do you think, Kitty?
Well, I would agree and disagree at the same time, because I think that scene in the movie is well done. And the one thing about this Gerard in the movie is that he certainly is not going to hesitate to shoot Kimball. And, you know, they don't even have any kind of a history together, whereas in the series, it was a real rarity to actually see Gerard take a shot at Kimball. In fact, I think we only saw him do that in one episode, where he pulled out his gun and really made an effort to try to kill him. But I would agree that I liked the elevator instance in the series better than the stairway, simply because when the doors open on the elevator, I thought it was a brilliant touch that Kimball was the free guy on the elevator, and it was Barry Morse who was actually behind the bars. He was locked behind some bars to go into another area, and he saw, I mean, the looks on both of their faces are great. And I remember when Barry Morse, he grabs the bars. I mean, it's like he wants to rip the bars apart like he's Superman, you know, but of course he can't. And so I thought that was very well done.
Well,
but I don't have a problem with the outside in the movie either. I mean, I thought it was a good touch having Kimball disappear into the parade.
Well, yeah, I'll grant you that, and that was of course something original. It didn't appear in the series. But my feelings about it, normally I don't really enjoy when things are recreated or redone, because I don't see the point in it. But if you're going to do it, I think you ought to do it exactly the way it was the first time. And this is another case in which they're tweaking it and making little changes that I don't think are necessary. And given the fact that we're so many years later between 63 and 93, with the special effects that were now available by 93, and the far greater production, the look of a production, it should have been an even better scene than it was the first time. So I would really take that to task. I don't think that if you're going to do it right, or absolutely don't do it. Ken, are you disturbed by the fact that that the new Gerard doesn't mind actually killing Kimball outright?
Yeah, that was when he starts shooting at the window, bulletproof, sliding door window. I was kind of taken back from that. The first time you see the movie, you see him firing. His dumb foot is stuck there, and then he escapes, and Gerard is just there. I mean, what was the point to that? I mean, he's going to shoot the guy? I mean, is he really that much of a dangerous villain? All he's doing, he's a marshal. He was assigned to find Kimball, who escaped the train wreck and supposedly murdered his wife, according to the trial. And so I guess he heard all this news, but is he really a serial killer that's out to kill all of Chicago? So you're going to shoot him right on the spot?
Well, yeah, I think he was acting the way you would expect a cop to act. I mean, remember, he blew away another guy in another scene.
Now this is the problem I have with the differences between the two things, because I always got the feeling in the original series that Gerard, it was more personal with him. He wanted to bring him in alive. I don't think the original Gerard ever had any interest in bringing Kimball in dead. The interest wasn't there because he had gotten away from him specifically. And he wanted to march back to headquarters and say, well, it was worth it, all the time I've spent, all the taxpayers' money I've spent, running around the country looking for this guy. Here he is. I got him back. I lost him. I got him back. I don't think that this was a case of wanting to bring him back dead. I never got the feeling that he really was interested in that, because Tommy Lee Jones in the movie is a federal marshal, and there's no background at all, because the story has just started in the middle of nowhere, and we don't get that years and years of running and looking and all of that. That he was just doing his job, and if he brings him in alive, fine. But if he brings him in dead, well, that's fine too, because that's his job, and he doesn't care one way or the other. You agree with that at all, Ken?
I don't think a federal marshal is out to kill, is he?
Well, not unless he has to.
Well, what's his life really in threat?
He's telling him to stop. I mean, if the guy doesn't stop, it's like, what do you expect a cop to do?
Shoot him in the back?
Well, now, wait a minute. He wasn't shooting him in the back. They were facing each other.
Well, as he was running toward the sliding
door. Oh, yeah.
I believe he was shooting.
That's true. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he was shooting him in the back.
Well, but then again, I mean, if you're a suspect, I mean, here it is. He's been convicted of murder. I mean, Gerard doesn't know the whole story. He just knows that this guy is a convicted murderer.
That's what I mean. Exactly.
But is Kimball armed, and is he dangerous? Does he have a hostage?
Well, how do we know that he's armed or not?
They're supposed to presume that he's armed and dangerous because...
We don't know.
Because he's been wanted for murder.
And when Kimball gets through that door there, and Tommy Lee Jones is shooting at him, he's not really trying to wound him in the leg or anything. But then from that distance, and the way Kimball was stuck, right? I think, didn't he have his foot stuck in the door, Kitty?
Yeah.
It would have been difficult, I think, to wound him. It just looked to me, when you see where those bullets hit the glass and shatter the glass, at least make an indentation in the glass, it doesn't shatter, that he would have been a dead man if there had not been bulletproof glass there. But it's a good scene. Look, I have no problem with the scene. I think it's very exciting. And as Ken pointed out, they do the parade scene, which is certainly most unusual. I don't know how many people know it, but they filmed that parade scene at the last minute. They didn't tell anybody about it. They simply were filming, and Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford joined a real parade that was already in progress. So at the website where I read that, it said that if you take a good look at the film, you'll see that the people in the parade are looking around wondering who these two people are who joined the parade in the middle of nowhere. So you got to give them credit for, you know, going the extra mile and making it realistic. In that respect, I think it's very good. That's the part of the movie that I really do like.
Well, everybody likes a parade. I mean, what the heck? If you're out there filming a movie and there's a parade, who can resist?
Well, especially if the convicted murderer joins it, yeah.
We're going to take a time out here, and then we'll come back and join the parade for part two of part two on the Fugitive movie, Talking Fugitive, on Sheriff Vision Radio.
There's a lot more to KSAV than just Tuesday night. From 6 a.m. through midnight, 7 days a week, it's Retro Radio. All the great music from the 40s,
unforgettable,
50s,
Moon River, wider than
and 60s. With old commercials and station identifications from years gone by. Old-time radio programs such as Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Dragnet, and many more make the nostalgia complete. Set your computer at work to KSAV and let everyone enjoy the music and the memories of a different era as KSAV plays all the music of your life every day of your life.
Back to talk a little more of the Fugitive movie, and we will not dawdle any longer than necessary. Let's get right back to Bobby Neer.
Right now, at the Fugitive Views and Reviews, we are all suffering, and I do mean suffering, through the infamous Season 4 of the series, an issue we will take on at length in a future radio program. But before we get to this unfortunate place, near the end of Season 3, appeared the very last all-time classic episode of the original series. We didn't know it then, but it would never happen again. For Fugitive fans of The Chase, it's a dream come true. No girlfriends, no dysfunctional characters and their family problems, no murder plots with Kimball in the middle of them, no wandering off into places that have nothing to do with the basic premise of the series. This one is Chase, Chase, and more Chase. As if Richard Kimball doesn't have enough problems with an obsessive human like Gerard, he finds himself up against something even more heartless, cunning, and intelligent, a nuts and bolts forerunner of today's personal computers, the 2130, Part 1, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. We have two emails to read that concern tonight's topic, the movie version. Kitty will read one first, and then I will read the other, and we can comment on them. Kitty?
Okay, this is from Linda in Pennsylvania. She says, personally, I like the changes in the movie where necessary just to keep it within the two-hour time frame and to fit the historical era it was written for. While the original was film noir, which fit in that era, the movie was an action thriller more suitable for today's audiences, as attested by its continuous running on cable to this day. Things I liked. Kimball and his wife with a happy relationship. Here Kimball was simply convicted because the husband is the prime suspect and there was no evidence of anyone else. Not like in the 60s version where they created conflict just to justify the guilty verdict. The 911 call was a nice modern touch. The more complex conspiracy and the surprising revelation that Kimball was the intended victim. It gave Kimball something better to search for than just finding the one-armed man, given our repeated comments that this will do him little good in 1960 since he can prove Johnson did it. In the movie, we know who and why. The new Gerard, we have often commented on how improbable it was that Gerard could flit all over the country tracking Kimball. In the movie, as a federal marshal, he had more leeway for a shorter duration. Also, Tommy Lee Jones just did a fantastic job. All the little touches that harked back to the original, like when he helped Joel in the hospital and the classic scene in the jail. Things I did not like, that jump off the dam was spectacular, but pretty unbelievable that he survived without a scratch. Likewise, the train wrecks. Still, it was an action thriller, which today's computer... With today's computer graphics, I've seen a lot more unbelievable things, which are truly annoying.
Okay, thanks very much. This is from Sarah, who just joined our group about 2 weeks ago. This is the issue at the heart of all our troubles with The Fugitive. Creativity giving birth to new creativity is not copying. That's how the world works, rehashing someone else's work nearly line for line, especially when done without understanding the intent of the original creator is copying. If The Fugitive is such a good idea, and movie makers and musicians are so attracted to it, then let them go ahead and create a similar show. But let them create their own characters, and let them get new actors to interpret these roles. Let them come up with their own name, theme, and of course music for the series, and let's see if they can write a script that can touch a chord in the hearts of the audience today, which is, of course, different in many ways, but yet similar, too. If it were markedly different from the creation that I knew as The Fugitive, I wouldn't mind. And if I liked it, I'd watch it, but not to be insulted if its differences caused it to be inferior. I watched an online interview with Roy Huggins a few months back. Huggins was a genius. If he'd done the writing for this series and been given a free hand, it would have been out of this world. Nothing could have topped it in any rating, and Jansen wouldn't have gotten overworked and bored. I recently watched an old TV series in which Huggins wrote all the episodes, and it is amazing what he could do and how much he could pack in an episode. And with Jansen and Morse acting, wow, a genius and a quite sharp one, too. He surely didn't miss the fact that the Ford movie wasn't up to the standards of the original Fugitive, but he just smiled and went home with that big fat check in his pocket. Well, at his age, he must have figured, why not? Do you want to know what I remember most about the movie? The attempt to make Harrison Ford look like David Jansen. Ugh. They are just two people with very different facial features and body types, too. It looked absolutely ridiculous. And even worse, the attempt to make Ford look like the older Kimball, i.e. an older Jansen with gray hair, before he escapes and alters his appearance, made me think they were watching reruns of Little House on the Prairie instead of The Fugitive when they came up with that getup. In my mind, poor Ford would never be the same again. He was forever bumped off my list for good-looking, and since Ford didn't play the role with the finesse of Jansen, it just added to the crude image. That's about all I remember except the waterfall jump and extended lead-up to the intense confrontation at the end. Thanks very much, Sarah and Melissa. I have to say, I never considered the visual differences between the original and the movie actors. I was too busy agonizing over the other failures in the film version. But Sarah, if any of that bothered you, consider this, which appears at the Internet Movie Database regarding the film. Alec Baldwin was first choice to play Dr. Richard Kimball. When he dropped out, Andy Garcia was considered for the role. Kevin Costner was also considered for the role of Richard Kimball. Harrison Ford took over the lead role after Alec Baldwin passed on it. John Voight and Gene Hackman were both offered the role of Sam Gerard. I have to say that I think Harrison Ford was miserably miscast in this film. He just isn't the type, although he did fit the producer's intent to make The Fugitive an action-adventure flick. David Jansen could never have done it that way in a million years. Personally, I would have loved to have seen Kevin Costner as Kimball and Gene Hackman as Gerard. I suspect I would feel a lot different having gone that way, since they are two of my all-time favorite actors. Ironically, Costner and Hackman would several years later play very memorably opposite each other in the film No Way Out. Kitty, if you love Harrison, even if you love Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones in these parts, any fantasy suggestions from you along with the ones they considered who might have been very interesting in these roles?
Actually, I didn't know about the Alec Baldwin and Andy Garcia. Andy Garcia might have been interesting.
Really? I was going to say that seems like the least likely to me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, when she said that they were trying to make Harrison Ford look like David Janssen, to tell you the truth, that never once crossed my mind when I was watching the movie.
Not mine either.
When I saw that movie, I was thinking that they were not trying to emulate David Janssen in any way. I mean, because Harrison Ford, I mean, let's face it, he looks nothing like the guy. You know, and to me it seemed like to have him alter his appearance, he was just doing what anybody would do in that situation, whether you're David Janssen or whoever who's playing the part.
You know,
so
I really...
None of that fazed me.
But I really like the idea of Costner in there.
Yeah, he could have been interesting. It would be interesting to know why they turned the parts down. And actually, Kevin Costner and Gene Hackman played in that No Way Out movie before The Fugitive was ever
made. Was that before, really?
Yeah.
Was that long ago?
That was in the 80s.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Movie. Yeah.
All right. Okay. How about Gene Hackman as Gerard? I like that, too.
I certainly think he would have been good as Gerard. I mean, Gene Hackman, he's good in pretty much anything he does,
yeah,
when you get right down to it.
Ken, what do you think of this?
How about Clint Eastwood as Gerard?
No.
He's a little long in the tooth even then, wasn't he?
In 93?
He's like 70 something.
And have him pull out his gun on Harrison Ford. Well, just tell me something, punk. Do you feel lucky today?
Dirty Harry chases Richard Kimball. That's pretty
good. If it was Dirty Harry chasing Richard Kimball, the movie would have been over probably in about 10 minutes, because Dirty Harry wouldn't have needed to do all the things that Gerard did.
Well, these are interesting choices that they were thinking of doing. Andy Garcia I like a lot, but he's got that kind of baby face, and I don't know. I just can't see him as being as relentless and as nasty as he would need to be. To be chasing Richard Kimball, it just doesn't look right. But I think
what about the end? We got to talk about the end. To me, I thought it was horrible, horrible ending
of what of the movie.
Yeah, the movie.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. Oh yeah.
He goes into that dinner party, looks at the guy, and the other guy. He's giving a speech. And then he goes out the back door.
For one thing, it's not exciting because he's not chasing the one-armed man.
Right. And then they're going down the hallway, and you got Tommy Lee Jones, or Gerard, you know, he's in there too. And, oh, guess what?
Oh, Kimball. One minute. I'll guess that.
Guess what? Kimball saves the life of Sam Gerard this time.
Well, why
what
not?
A disappointment.
He saved the life of Phil Gerard 6 times, plus the life of his wife and his kid. Why not have him save him at least once in the
He's
movie?
Chasing
we
the
should be
wrong
thankful
man.
It was only once.
He's chasing the wrong man. When I say fugitive to you, what do you think of? One-armed man, right?
Yes.
Well, then he's chasing the wrong guy. He dispatched the one-armed man too early. He should have been chasing him. Don't give me a new actor. It's got to be the two of them one-on-one, just like it was at the end of the original series. That's the only way, because the one-armed man is everything. By the time he puts the one-armed man away back on that subway car,
yeah,
and we get to the ending, I'm thinking to myself, well, so what? I mean, the one-armed man wasn't villainous enough. He just,
What's your rating for the movie?
My personal rating?
Yeah.
I think probably about 6.
All right. Well, we know that we spent 2 parts talking about this simply because Bobby Neer is such a big fan of the movie.
That's
but
right.
But in 2 weeks, we'll get back to the television program, The Fugitive. Hope all of you will join in then, and as you heard tonight, participate with your emails as well and be a part of the program. We'll be back in 2 weeks talking Fugitive, the television program, here on Retro Radio.